Right. Welcome back. It's the Avid Investor Podcast with me, your host, Josh Adamek. Here we are, episode 51. And today I'm going to talk about the difference of being an active investor versus a passive investor. What are the two? What's an active investor? What's a passive investor? And how are the two different? I'm also going to cover some different investment opportunities, things to look at, things to look out for, and we'll go from there. So let's roll. Excuse me. But before I get into that, I wanted to throw something else out there. I wanted to talk about something else real quick. And that's the something that comes to mind often to me. And it's the difference. It's discipline versus motivation. It's like, you know, the world we live in, the social media world, everybody wants to motivate you. Everybody wants to cheer you up. Everybody wants to be a cheerleader and tell you to go do hard shit and go do tough things. And it's going to make you stronger in the long run. Go do this, go do that, go do 75 hard, go do, you know, this 30-day challenge. They want to motivate you to do all this stuff. In reality, what we need is discipline. So it comes to mind in particular for me with this podcast. So I started this podcast several years ago, thanks to a good friend of mine who led me to do it. Shout out to Brian here, led me to start the podcast, helped me, you know, told me what equipment to get, told me that what platforms to use, everything, got me rolling. And then I hit 40 some episodes and then I fell off. I had a guy at the office that was helping me. You know, I would record the content and then he would take it. You know, he'd do the clips. He'd get it all out there on the different platforms and different social medias. And long story short, he had an opportunity where he moved out of state and, you know, I no longer had that resource. So I kept putting it off. And I wasn't recording the podcast. And I had one person after another, you know, asking me about the podcast, telling me how much they liked it. I occasionally had people that found the old episodes that would reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I listened to your podcast and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, just getting a lot of good feedback and kind words. You know, and I kept telling myself that, you know, I'm going to get back out there. I'm going to record, you know, I'm going to get back on the podcast. And here we are. I think it was a little over 2 years later where I finally started the podcast. So moral of the story is that I was motivated to get the podcast going again. However, I wasn't disciplined enough to get the podcast going again. It really wasn't that much work for me to figure out how to get it out there, how to do the work that the guy that worked for me was handling. But I put it off for a little over 2 years because I was motivated, but I wasn't disciplined. And then interestingly enough, here we are. We're 3 weeks into the podcast, so I'm episode 51. We came back with, I think it was episode 49. So 49, 50, and now we're on 51. We're 3 weeks in, and I was motivated. I've been motivated to get this going and get this started again. And you know, when it comes to the discipline is what's key, because here we go. The second week, which was last week, you know, I was sick. You know, had the bug running through the house. My wife was down for like 4 days straight. I mean, nobody saw her. She was camped out in a room. You know, partly she was sick and trying to recover. Partly she was trying not to get the kids sick. You know, and so she was down. Then I ended up getting it. I was down on Sunday. You know, Monday I was feeling a little bit better, but I still wasn't right. And I'm like, man, I should not do that podcast. I should skip that one. But there goes the motivation versus the discipline. So I was disciplined enough that, you know, even though I wasn't feeling it, I still came in. You know, I recorded the episode and I got it all out there. And the same thing today. Here we are. I got a late start at the office because I had an early morning meeting. And coming in, my inbox is full. I got a bunch of calls to make. I got a bunch of things to do. However, I'm disciplined. I'm disciplining myself and I'm getting this recorded and I'm getting it out there. And I'm going to stay consistent with that discipline to get this done every week, week after week. And, you know, I hope that, you know, over time we ramp it up with with more consistency, and you know, we get you know, get it out there maybe two or three times a week, and really start to ramp things up. But for now, you know, my discipline is once a week. I'm going to get it done no matter what. So here we are. We're episode 51, and just want to throw that out there. You got to have discipline, because motivation won't always get it done. But with that, I'm going to move on. I want to the main purpose of this episode, the main topic I want to cover is active investors versus passive investors. What are the two? What are the differences? So just let's start with the basics, because that's what I got to do a lot of times on these episodes. Just go back to the very, very basics. And it might be boring to some, but it might be helpful to others. So here we go. Just an active investor. What is an active investor? An active investor is someone that is going to be active in the project, whatever investment that is. Let's just use real estate, for example, because that's what I do. You want to be an active real estate investor. That means you, and it's confusing because we get passive income from real estate. But if you are an active investor, that means you are the sponsor of the deal. That means you are the deal. You are making the deal. You are creating the deal. You are managing the deal. So let's just take, you know, single family home investing, for example. You want to build up a portfolio of single family homes. You want to buy some rental properties. If you're an active investor, you are the one that goes out and finds the property. You are the one that goes out, you or your team, whatever. You find the property, you build the capital stack, you get the money, the debt, the equity, whatever, the cash, you create that capital stack, you close on the property, you are the one that fixes it up, you are the one that remarkets the property, assuming you're doing the management in-house and not going with a third-party manager. Whatever you choose to do is up to you, but you know, if you go with third-party management, there's cost associated with that. And you got to do your due diligence and really, really thoroughly screen your third party manager if that's what you decide to do. So it's going to be your deal. You control the deal. You're responsible for the deal. You're responsible for all the actions of the deal as an active investor. Passive investor. Passive investor is typically someone that just does the money side of the deal. Typically someone that has excess capital, excess cash, whether that's sitting in a cash account, an old IRA, a self-directed retirement account, any sort of investment account. Passive investor is typically the person that just provides the money for the deal. So a passive investor typically isn't involved in the day-to-day operations of the deal, you know, whether that be through a debt or equity contribution. The capital investor is more or less the passive investor is more or less just the check writer in the deal. So active investor does everything, boots on the ground. Passive investor is pretty much just a check writer. So that's the difference between the two. A lot of people get into real estate and they, you know, I talk with many, many folks that are, you know, high net worth, business owners, successful, you know, in their businesses, maybe some professional pro athletes, current, former, whatever. And they say, well, I want to buy real estate. I want to get involved in, I want to do real estate. Okay, do you want to be active or do you want to be passive? Well, I want to buy real estate. Okay, do you want to be active or do you want to be passive? Do you want to deal with all the day to day? Do you know how to underwrite a deal? Do you know how to source properties? You know, I start asking questions and kind of hone in on. Seems like they just want to get the benefits that real estate has to offer, and they don't necessarily want to be an active real estate investor. Two totally different things we're talking about. An active real estate investor, we are, you know, we're in the trenches day to day. We're finding properties, we're fixing them, we're filling them, we're dealing with residents, we're dealing with turnovers, with renovations, construction. There's a lot of moving pieces to be an active real estate investor. And when I have these conversations with guys that and folks, not just guys, with folks that want to get into real estate, and I start asking these questions, well, do you want to do all this stuff? No. Okay. So you want to be a passive investor. You don't want to be an active real estate investor. Okay. We got that covered. No problem. Sometimes the comment comes up, well, I'll just get a real estate agent to find me some properties and I'll put them with a property manager. Okay. Challenge with that is who's underwriting the deal to make sure it's a good deal, right? Real estate agents, while they're a great resource, not every real estate agent knows how to properly underwrite a deal and make sure something's going to cash flow, right? So hiring a real estate agent and then putting your investments with a third-party property manager might not be the best move there, because if you don't know how to underwrite a deal, the agent doesn't know how to underwrite a deal, you don't know that you're getting a deal. And then putting it with a third party management, if you've overpaid for the asset and then there's management costs, how are you going to make any money, right? So that's typically the thought process on how folks that are new to real estate want to become an passive real estate investor, is just get a real estate agent and then put the properties with property management. However, another option for that is to look at participating in offerings, in public offerings, or public or private partnerships. And that's also another way to become a passive investor. And reason why I wanted to talk about this today is lately, my social media news feed has just been bombarded. I mean, absolutely filled with one syndication after another. And there's a lot of different opportunities out there, a lot of different things to look at, and a lot of the different things to get involved in. And as a passive investor, I just wanted to go over some of my thoughts behind these offerings and solicitations and things that you should look for. Number one, you got to look at the sponsor of the deal. Who's behind the deal? Like, if you're looking at a public solicitation, who's the sponsor? What's their track record? How many deals confirmed have they closed and completed under a similar offering? What's their track record? Can you connect with some of the investors, that have participated in their deals, to get some feedback? What's their track record? Number two, what is the solicitation? The syndication? What type of deal? You gotta not get caught up in the shiny object syndrome. Just because it's a flashy solicitation, fancy, write up, whatever, boasting, big, high preferred returns, big cash on cash return, big projections. You gotta really dig into that. So, like, what does that really mean? First off, what's a preferred return? A preferred return is in an offering, in a solicitation, that's what the investor is going to get before any split goes out to the sponsor of the deal in some metric, one way or another. So, and when is that preferred? What you want to ask is what's the terms of that preferred return, right? So, is it an annual preferred return? Is it in the deal as a whole? Is it for the life of the deal, that preferred return? So if you see a syndicator that's offering, a 10 pref or a 12 pref or a 15 pref, well, if that's annual, that's a pretty good preferred return. But if that's over, 5 or 7 years, maybe it's not that great of a preferred return. Maybe that's just an average preferred return. Then look at cash on cash returns. How are those cash on cash returns accounted for, calculated, projected? What has to happen in order to hit those cash on cash returns? What does the pro forma look like? The property, what property, what are we investing in? You know, what's the property type? Is this investment, is it speculative? Obviously if there's a growth factor, it's going to be speculative in some capacity. But is this a cash flowing asset, or is this a mega renovation? You know, is this a full blow, is this a multi-unit complex that needs, multi-million dollar, deca-million dollar renovation in order to get the occupancy to start the lease up? Is this something that's like a paint and carpet rehab where it's quicker lease up? Is there a high occupancy now? If there's a high occupancy now, what's the reason for it? Is it mismanagement from current or former ownership? And what are they going to do to correct the occupancy? And is the low occupancy something that can be corrected? Is there market demand? There are lots of questions to ask, but a lot of the things that I'm bringing up all goes back to the sponsor itself. You really got to look at who you're investing with, check their track record, their background, and really, really do some proper due diligence there. If you'd like to be a passive investor, and, when it comes to, different investment types. When I mentioned earlier, let's not get caught up in the shiny object syndrome. What's cool and what's hip and what's hot today? What's a sexy investment today could be total dog crap tomorrow, next week, next month. I mean, stuff can change at the flip of a switch. Let's take the short-term rentals, for example. I've seen a few funds out there, a few syndications for short-term rentals. So let's just say there's a sponsor that put out a fund that, does a syndication for, they're going to go out and create a portfolio of short-term rentals. Short-term rentals, I mean Airbnbs, for lack of a better term. So we're going to do a portfolio. I'm not saying we. The potential syndicator is going to do a portfolio of short-term rentals in and around Pittsburgh. Let's just say in Pittsburgh. So they do a fund. You invest in that fund. Syndicator goes out. They buy all these really cool houses, Southside, Lawrenceville, Mount Washington, got a couple on Grandview Avenue, views of the city, Bailey, views of the city. Southside, one of those homes that are hanging over the hillside with all the decks and views of the city, get some nice stuff throughout, let's just say they pick something up, over on the north side, wherever. What I'm getting at is we're buying, this potential syndicator is buying, nicer homes in trendy parts of the city, probably paying a premium for them. And then, syndicator closes on them, furnishes them all. I furnished Airbnbs, costs a fortune. I mean, most of us listening here have bought furniture for our home. So just imagine that you have a vacant home and you need to go out day one and buy every piece of furniture that you need to live there. Every piece of furniture, every towel, every plate, every fork, every spoon, everything. It costs a fortune to set up an Airbnb, a short-term rental. So the syndicator does this. Let's just say there's, 25 or even 50 homes in this portfolio. So you invest in this portfolio, syndicator goes out, you and, 50 other people invest in this portfolio, syndicator goes out, buys a bunch of Airbnbs, gets them all set up, gets them all operational, and then they're all cash flowing, making good money, because the syndicator's great at managing the short-term rentals. They've been doing it for years, right? So everything's going good. This is a five-year investment. You're a year and a half into it. It's stabilized. Everything's cash flowing. You're getting your distribution checks. And then let's just say out of the blue, City of Pittsburgh puts a stop to it. No more short-term rentals. What happens? Fair question. It's a question you should ask. So I'll tell you what happens. It's panic mode, right? Like, you invest in one asset class with one exit strategy. You got one exit strategy. Keep them as short-term rentals, or sell the properties. And if you paid market price for full market value for a property, and then you spend a small fortune to furnish it, you're certainly not going to sell the furniture and the, you know, everything in the house to get your money back. What about the properties themselves? Can you sell them for more than you paid for them? Maybe, but that depends on market conditions. Let's say the market held steady. And you got to list those and sell them. You're going to sell them at a break even if you're lucky. In reality, you know, by the time you add your commissions and your cost to sell, the cleanup, the turn and everything, they're going to be underwater. So point being is, you know, if you're looking at, you got to look at the investment strategy of that syndication. Just because Airbnbs, for example, short-term rentals, and I'm picking on that on the short-term rentals as an example, just because I don't know anybody that's doing a short-term rental fund. I see that they're out there, but I don't personally know anyone. So it's one of the reasons why I'm picking on a little bit on that strategy. But if that's your only strategy with your fund and for your investors, and City of Pittsburgh or whoever pulls the rug out from under you and says, no more short-term rentals, then screwed. I mean, you got to liquidate the properties, probably going to sell them at a loss if it's only been a year and a half and you paid market price for them. Liquidate the properties. And then, you know, the investors end up losing some money when, you know, they're projecting that we're going to do this for 5 years, then we're going to sell, you know, we're going to sell. They like likely, you know, that under that offering on that syndication, it would have said something like, we're going to get you the syndication is going to get you a whatever, just say a 10% preferred return, a 20% cash on cash return. Oh, we didn't even talk about if there's debt on the portfolio. So imagine that one. If City of Pittsburgh says no more short-term rentals, and then, you know, all those properties have leverage on them, you got to make payments with no revenue. How's that going to work out? It's not. So when it comes to the investment strategy, you really gotta hone in on. I lost my train of thought there. I got sidetracked, but I was talking about the offering. When it comes to the offering, the syndication probably would have said something like, you know, a 10% preferred return, 20% cash on cash return, and you know, a 2 or 3 equity multiple. Well, how are you going to hit the equity multiple? Likely build that portfolio up, get a cash flowing, and then attempt an institutional exit or sell it off to someone else at the 5 or 7 year mark, which is what most syndications do, or refinance if possible. But you know, if you can no longer do your strategy, which is very likely that couldn't happen, that it could happen that a city or municipality could say no more short-term rentals. I mean, it's already happening. I know there's areas in Scottsdale. I don't think it's all of Scottsdale, Arizona, but there's areas, neighborhoods where the HOAs are very, very, very strict. I don't believe they're able to say no short-term rentals, but they're doing things like no one outside after 7 p.m. or something like that. Like if you live in one of these communities with a $10 million home, you're not allowed to be outside after 7 p.m. You know, they're hitting property owners with, you know, like $2,000 fines if their garbage cans are left out past 12 o'clock or 12 p.m. or something like crazy stuff like that. Why? Because if somebody owns a short-term rental and they're not there, somebody's not there to get the garbage can, they can just, the HOA or whoever can just keep banging them with these fines and make it painful enough to where they'll eventually want to sell and leave their community. So that's happening. You know, another thought on that, you know, just, you know, with all your eggs in one basket, you know, as far as investments, you know, other things, other big syndications that I'm seeing out there are, you know, along with the short-term rentals are self-storage, lots and lots and lots of self-storage syndications. So, you know, read up on that before you invest in anything. instead of just reading the offering memorandum, the OM from the sponsor, regardless of what you're going into or you want to look at going into, whether it's multifamily, self-storage, Airbnb, you know, whatever that syndication is, do your own market research and do your own due diligence. Don't just rely on the information provided in the offering. In the offering memorandum. If you're looking at investing in a self-storage complex, see what the demand is in the area. See what, there's a lot of free information on Google, but do your own market research. See what market saturation is. See what market vacancy is in a certain area, certain demographic. If you're looking at a self-storage complex in whatever, let's just say Cleveland, Ohio, and you do a little research and you find out that the average vacancy rate is, you know, 30% in self-storage or 40% or, you know, whatever, 20%. Maybe there's an oversaturation. And maybe that complex that the offering memorandum that the complex is, or the self-storage facility that's being purchased at, you know, 75% occupancy, and the sponsor is claiming that we're going to get it to 92% occupancy, but you do a little market research and realize that market occupancy is, you know, 85% and not 92. Well, that affects the bottom line. That affects drastically affects the investment and the return. So, doing a little due diligence on your end. You know, another thing is, often comes to mind is, you know, multifamily. There's a lot of multifamily syndications out there. Quite a few. And I see that, you know, more and more operators, it seems like, are going towards, subsidized housing and Section 8 with multifamily. And, you know, there's a concern there. I mean, I'm not going to get too deep into the politics behind that. But, you know, again, that may be getting all your eggs into one basket, right? So, well, it's definitely getting all your eggs into one basket. Let's just face it. If you're going to invest into a multifamily complex, one, again, check the sponsor of the deal first. Make sure they have a strong track record of multifamily investing and management and repositioning. Two, if you're investing in a multifamily complex in the middle in a town in the middle of nowhere that's subsidized housing. One, you know, you got to check the demand. You know, whether it's subsidized or not, you got to check the demand. Two, just know that, like, you know, that's also something that can go away at any time. Like, let's just say you invest in a multifamily complex and the lease up is, you know, they're going, it's whatever, close it, whatever, 60% occupancy, and they're going to lease it up to 90, 92, 95, and then exit. So close on it. You're heavily invested in this syndication. They're going through, they're renovating the units, getting the inspections, doing the lease up. And then, hey, out of nowhere, Trump comes in, signs an executive order, freezes all federal funding. What happens? Right? Something that's very real, right? Let's just say it's not a freeze. Let's just say there's a big correction in the funding for the program, for the government program. You gotta keep in mind, like, there are investors, there are companies that are very heavily involved in subsidized housing and government and Section 8 funding, but, you know, you're at the mercy of the government. That can go away, that can change at any point. So, and again, multifamily, one exit strategy, right? So, I could go on and on and on with syndications and offerings. And don't get me wrong, I mean, any one of those that I mentioned could be an amazing opportunity, right? You get the right sponsor, you get the right deal, you do your due diligence, you get in the right market timing, you get in the right entry and the right exit. You can make a tremendous, tremendous amount of money investing as a passive investor in a syndication. No doubt. Just keep in mind that you got to do your due diligence. And I know sponsors that have completed deals, syndications start to finish, closed out. I know passive investors that have participated in syndications in pretty much all the ones that I mentioned above, except for the short-term rentals. But I know investors that have gone into, you know, multifamily syndications, have gone into self-storage syndications, and have done amazingly well, made a tremendous amount of money and amazing ROI and equity multiples in those syndications. However, those investors, one, they did proper due diligence. They didn't just invest in the first thing they saw on Instagram, or they didn't invest in the first pop-up. They really did their homework with looking at the sponsor and the deal itself, and really picked and choosed as far as the ones they invested in. So, you know, that's that. I have my thoughts, and everybody else does on, you know, different investment strategies. I've looked at many investment strategies myself. I've participated in some, not many, but I've participated in some offerings and investments outside of my go-to as an investor, as a passive investor, not so much active. But I've participated in other offerings outside of my go-to investment strategy. But at the end of the day, no matter how closely I look at different investment strategies, whether it be multifamily, self-storage, commercial, strip malls, whatever development, I've done my fair share of development and new construction. No matter what investment strategy I look at, I always just go back to my bread and butter, my go-to, which is portfolios of single family homes and B-class neighborhoods. Whether you want to be an active investor, or whether you want to be a passive investor, my go-to is single family homes, B-class neighborhoods in and around the Pittsburgh market. If you're not in Pittsburgh, there's a market similar to Pittsburgh somewhere close to you. Just medium price point, middle-class areas is where we invest, where we build our portfolios. It's predictable. We get safe, secure cash flow. And we structure our partnerships. We create our portfolios through equity partnerships, which most of you already know that. But with the single family homes, regardless of market conditions, there's always a need for a $1,200 to $1,500 a month rental. Regardless of market conditions, regardless of market conditions, there's multiple exit strategies with single family homes. There's flexibility, and you could scale single family homes. You can have a portfolio that's as large or as small as you would like. you know, you're not gonna get the crazy growth, the crazy scale, like some of these syndicators that can go out and buy, you know, 200, 300, 500, 1,000 units at a clip. But most of us, you know, don't need or want that. You know, with the trade-off for me is, you know, the safety, the security, the cash flow, you know, the long-term, the capital growth, everything that single family homes have to offer and portfolios of single family homes have to offer, like, it can't be beat with multifamily. And, you know, the one thing that, and I just had this conversation over breakfast this morning. The one thing that I've never heard, when you ask a syndicator or a multifamily investor, why multifamily? Ask them why multifamily. Scale, so I can grow more, so I can buy more, so I can buy more. When I ask a multifamily investor that question, like, well, why multifamily? And that's always the answer. It's scale, so I can grow more, I can buy more, we can grow bigger. What I have never, the answer that I've never got from you know, a multifamily investor when asked that question is, well, that's the safest place for my investors to be, right? So I've never heard that answer when I ask the question. So it goes back to, you know, portfolios of single family homes. Well, we may not be able to grow as large and, you know, get 6, 5, 6, 8, 10,000 units under management in, you know, a couple of years with a syndication run. You know, what I can say is that, you know, I think single family homes is the best place for my investors to be, right? Right? Because I've personally looked at so many different investment strategies, and I've always found, and this is my opinion, right? And somebody else may have a totally different opinion. But, you know, I've always found a potential flaw in something that's outside of single family homes and portfolios of single family homes. You know, when you compare the two, single family, multifamily, self-storage, commercial, when you compare all of those, are there pros and cons of each? Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Can you gain greater efficiencies managing a multi-unit, a complex over, you know, 100 units that are scattered all over town? Yeah, absolutely. I don't know another good example, but when it comes to maintenance, when it comes to turns, when it comes to just about anything, you know, lawn care, is it easier to manage, you know, 100 unit a complex versus, you know, 100 scattered site units? Yes, absolutely. Right. on the flip side, when there's an issue, if there's an issue with, you know, a couple of single family homes, it doesn't affect the whole complex, right? They're scattered site, right? So when it comes time to when a property turns, you know, if a property turns, you got multiple exit strategies. You could fix it. You could fill it again. You could sell it as is. You could fix it up. You could sell it. There's ways to monetize these single family homes where, you know, you got everything in a 100 unit complex. You're going to keep turning the apartment, fixing it and turning it. You got one strategy, and that's to exit the complex to another investor that's buying on a cap rate, contingent to market cycles, interest rates, current cap rates. So there's pros and cons of each. I mean, I could go on and on and on comparing the two, but you know, that's probably enough examples for right now. Just reaffirming that, you know, our go-to is portfolios of single family homes. And, you know, if you're an active investor, you want to be an active investor, you want to get started in real estate, you want to be an active investor, go join your local REIA. In Pittsburgh, we have Acre of Pittsburgh. I talked about it before. I'm not super involved with Acre anymore. I was on the board of directors for, I was involved with the organization heavily for 20 years. I was on the board of directors for probably 15. I was the president of the organization for 7 or 8 years, something like that. Great organization. But if you want to be an active investor, join your local RIA and network with people in the organization. I'd highly recommend, if you're not in Pittsburgh, find a RIA. And RIA is short for Real Estate Investors Association, if you didn't know that. But join your local RIA. If you're not in Pittsburgh, look up National RIA and then find your local chapter, subchapter of National RIA. ACRE is Pittsburgh's local subchapter of National RIA. And join the organization, get to know some people, and, you know, get your, start growing your network and your sphere of influence there. If you want to be an active investor, if you want to be a passive investor, there's so many different opportunities. I wouldn't even know where to begin, to tell you, but if you're going to look through these syndications, just do your due diligence, do your due diligence on the sponsor and the deal itself. And don't just rely on the offering memorandum. Don't just rely on the sponsor's word, do your own DD, find a broker. Maybe you got a broker friend that can help you take a look at the deal, that can underwrite the deal itself and give you some good or bad. But there's lots of ways to do that. If you wanted to be an active investor, a passive investor, you could also check out the local RIA. I mean, if you got some deep pockets and you just want to be passive, you can meet some guys at the local RIA, folks at the local RIA, that don't have the deep pockets, that want to be the active investor. And you could do some equity partnerships, some private lending, through your local RIA. So, you know, we work with some private and institutional investors, and, you know, we create and manage the portfolios through Avid. You know, we, as of right now, you know, we don't do public offerings or syndications or anything like that. We just do the individual equity partnerships, but, you know, you can find my look around, you can find guys like me that to work with and do some equity partnerships. But there's a number of ways to be active and or passive, but just know that there's a clearly defined difference between the two. And that's really what I wanted to cover today. So I know I've gone way over time, way longer than we normally do. But I guess I was on a bit of a roll there with active investing versus passive investing, and a couple of different investment opportunities to look at and how to do your property due diligence. So just wanted to cover those things. And again, here we are, we're back. We're here to stay this time. So again, talked a little bit about discipline versus motivation. I'm going to stay disciplined to keep recording this and getting this out there. And you know, I just want to thank you guys so much for tuning in, so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening along. And if you found value in this, all I'm asking you to do is just share it with someone, share it on social media, send it to a friend, family member, that whatever, they can benefit from this. And then if you got any questions, anything you want me to cover in a future episode, or just if you got any questions that you'd like me to respond to, just hit me up, send me a message, DM, social media. You can find me on Instagram, Avid Investor, and connect and fire away. Aside from that, hope you guys have a great day, and thank you so much for tuning in.